podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. We are live at Silverstone in the GP Racing Fan Village. We are tucked away inside this lovely marquee because we thought it might rain again earlier. Meanwhile, everyone's outside having a beer. If you can bring yourselves to a cheer, the microphones will pick us up. Give us a cheer, Silverstone. 3, 2, 1, go. That may or may not have come out on the podcast. We don't know.
If it didn't, it was raucous.
It was amazing.
Point of principle, this is a bit big to be a marquee. I'd say it's a Mark F at least.
Let's introduce our two experts who have just made their way from the Silverstone paddock out to our makeshift podcast studio today. Matt Q joins us and Stuart Codling. From GP Racing Magazine, which is, there's plenty of them around here. So if you're here at Silverstone in the Fan Village, please do pick one up. It's a glorious magazine, the world's best-selling Formula One magazine. And it's got a new editor, apparently, Codders.
Yeah, where is it? Oh, he's here. It's me.
Congratulations.
Yes. I thank you. Thank you, everyone. I'll be signing autographs later.
You've got the big gig after only waiting...
20 years.
Yes. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, I know. I only look 15, but
what will that entail?
More hard work, and especially until we recruit someone to do my old job. So, if anyone out there wants to start polishing your CVs, then there will be an application process underway at some point.
And when's the next issue of GP Racing Magazine out?
July the 28th, if memory serves.
Well, what's it like, Matt? What's it like being back here at home of Formula One, back in the Silverstone paddock? The stands are full. The crowd have plenty to watch today, eventually, when the rain went. What's it like for you guys to be back?
It's a new experience for me. So I've come here once at the behest of Sunny, who's standing on the door. She invited me a couple of years ago before pandemic. And before that, I had only ever been here as an impoverished student. So I used to come for the young driver test because they're a cheap way to get in. So seeing it packed grandstands and proper Formula One, all the sort of big motorhomes and stuff, it's mega. It's a bit of a sensory overload. This is my first season doing Formula One. And the analogy I've used to most people is it's a bit like being 18 again, where you go to the bar and any alcohol is good alcohol. You don't have your preference between bitter and lager and cider or whatever. It's just
Malibu.
All good. Give it all to me. So I've been enjoying everything. But to come to Silverstone is incredibly special. But it'd be slightly better if it didn't rain.
Yes, it was. It did rain earlier. We had the showers. We think we're going to get good weather for the rest of the weekend. That's the plan anyway. And Codder's nice for you, you know, again, for the fans, for those of us that work in Formula One, to be back here at the circuit and seeing old friends again and being able to talk to the drivers and ask team members things on or off the record. It makes your job so much better than doing these Zoom calls.
Yeah, just being able to go around and speak to people is really, really useful. And it has been quite heavy weather the past sort of 2.5 years of having to assemble features based on stock pictures and Zoom calls with drivers. It's so much better to go out and speak to people and have proper pictures. It makes for a nicer magazine, just makes for more interest for people. The great thing for us has been the Netflix program Drive to Survive, which has kind of fired up a lot of interest with amongst people who ordinarily might not have watched Formula One 2 or 3 years ago, and so that they've got into it. And you see the crowd at Silverstone this weekend. I think when I interviewed Stuart Pringle, the MD of Silverstone, about a month or so ago for the current issue of GP Racing, he said that around 80% of the ticket bookers for this year's British Grand Prix didn't actually buy a ticket last year. So it's not necessarily people who haven't been before, but an awful lot of people who haven't bought tickets before. So they might be members of the same family as people who've bought tickets, doing a bit of quid pro quo, or they might be part of a new audience. So that's actually really fascinating as well.
FB1, not a huge amount to learn from it. You know, 10 drivers out on track, not great for the fans who have packed Silverstone once again. Some running, but not too much. And Matt, we sent you out trackside to go and watch from. Where were you watching FP1, and how wet did you get?
It wasn't too bad. So we headed to sort of the newer complex, which is that farm chapel, and then on to the Wellington Straight. So what you see through there, particularly when, as it was a bit slippery, you see them get loads of understeer as they come in, getting it all wrong on the curves, and then not being able to get the power down out of that. But unfortunately, we were looking up at the clouds, bit of rain, and then blue sky, and it dries, but it dries on this part of the track. The other side of the track is still very damp, so everyone was put off running, and I feel sorry for all the fans. It's the worst thing you can get really is rain, because it's particularly when you've got upgrades, and like you see the Williams, they've only got one upgraded car, parts are at a premium, so they're not going to risk it out and bin it, particularly if they knew the forecast for FP2 was dry. So not an awful lot going on. I was out there with my colleague Alex Kalinorka, so we had to make our own entertainment, but we're pretty good at that, but not a huge amount of reading. And then we got 5 minutes of action at the end, and then Lance Stroll promptly binned it. So not an awful lot, but I'm hoping I can use that as a bit of a leverage to get out again and watch some fast cars go around in circles tomorrow.
What exactly, FP3 in the morning? Is it the morning or is it the afternoon?
Who knows, about
11 o'clock, I think. The schedule's insane, isn't it? Like, I was here about 8 o'clock this morning, and there was no Formula 1 action until just after lunch had passed my lips. So it's very, very peculiar schedule.
Last year, of course, we hosted the sprint race here. So Friday had a different feel, and Saturday had a different feel. What was it like for you, Codders, this morning watching FP1? We'll get into FP2 as well, because that's when the action happened. All drivers were out in the first 90 seconds of FP2. This is a more of a kind of conventional weekend feeling, and actually one of the ways that Formula One works, the media sessions are going back to Thursdays, which have been piled into Fridays until now. Do you know when that changes? Because again, that'll be a much more conventional form to a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday running of the weekend.
Yeah, it's coming soon. I think what the FIA have realised is that it's a bit pointless running press conferences an hour before practice, because by the time you've transcribed your interviews and turned it into stories, they're already starting to be made irrelevant. So the whole point of moving things from Thursday into Friday was to make for a shorter weekend and save a little bit of money. But actually, it hasn't done that. People are still doing things on Thursdays, and the drivers are saying, well, look, why don't we just do stuff on Thursdays? And particularly at the newer Grand Prix, like the Miami Grand Prix just a couple of months ago, there was an awful lot of demand on their time, because F1 wanted to do as much publicity as it could, stretching their patience a little bit. It occupied a lot of Thursday, but a lot of them actually felt that they got a bit more value for their time coming out of that. So there's been a bit of pressure on the FIA to realign stuff, and FIA and F1 have kind of capitulated to the inevitable, which is that people are interested in what drivers have to say, and that has to be staggered through the course of a Grand Prix weekend as part of that process of building the excitement.
Because I wondered whether it was at some of those earlier Grand Prix, whether the drivers were being told, you have to be out of your bed at 6 o'clock, 6:30, because we've got a media session at 8:00. And with all, you know, the best will in the world, some of the drivers on the grid are going to say, no, you're okay. No, thanks.
They're not early risers. And the other thing is the format where you have 4 or 5 drivers in the same press conference. I don't know if the crowd have observed this while watching these on TV, but the average racing driver has the attention span of a three-year-old. So when they're not being asked a question, they're fiddling with their phone. They, you know, they're starting to pick their nose or whatever, or they're starting to banter to the guy next to them, and they're not really very engaged. So it's much better to do something in a more sensible way.
FP1 this morning, Bottas topped the damp first practice with a 142.249. Doesn't really count. FP2, Carlos Sainz and his Ferrari led the way ahead of Lewis Hamilton and Lando Norris. Max Verstappen fourth in the timesheet, but I want to ask these guys how much of that was a real lap and how much was he hindered or not pushing. Charles Leclerc in fifth, followed by Fernando Alonso in the Alpine, still running well. Sergio Perez in the second Red Bull, George Russell in the second Mercedes, Danny Ricciardo in ninth for McLaren, and Lance Stroll keeping it on track in 10th for the Aston Martin. So, let me ask you first about the, Matt, let me ask you first about the quick runs and that finishing order. How representative of that is real pace? I mean, no one's doing glory runs. It's not testing trying to attract a sponsor. But how much of that is real pace from your analysis?
At this point, we have the usual FP2 caveats, which we don't know about fuel loads and we don't know about engine mode. So this is all speculative. So we use soft language like you may seem or you might find rather than go, this is what's happening. The Sainz pace looks pretty genuine to me. Verstappen won the Red Bull. We know it's quick, so you could argue they're sandbagging. But two, he had a pretty busy session. He was fighting that red light warning that was going off. He was complaining about noise, thinking something's rubbing. So not necessarily in the loop. And then would the cynical part of me say that Hamilton being second and Norris third is a bit of a glory run, bit of a low fuel dash, sort of repay the fans for sitting out there in the rain when I got to watch not an awful lot? Perhaps I am that cynical to suggest it's a bit of a glory run, but we've got some long run times, which we'll come on to. Not the sexiest thing in the world, but it says Mercedes and McLaren are closer. But I think that Ferrari pace is genuine. And the flip side to that is a Red Bull pace. What Max Verstappen in fourth, is probably a bit slower than where they are. And again, with Perez in seventh and the Alpines have looked good the last few races. So I think Alonso in sixth place is, that's probably about right.
And it looked like there was a bit of, as you can see from my notebook, there was a point where my pen ran out of ink and I had to go to my B-spec pen.
Such is the way we are funded.
The Max Verstappen spent quite a long time in the garage with lots of changes being made to the front end of his car. So we have to factor that into account, that maybe we haven't seen the best of the Red Bull yet.
Cotters, is there any chance that, every home race, the local press, the national press, will do a, make more of a song and dance about it. Is there any chance that all the headlines being written overnight, Lewis Hamilton, he's back. What's your take on that and his quick pace and any upgrades that Mercedes might have brought to the track today?
Well, I think the reason my pen ran out of ink was that I started writing out everything that Mercedes had done to the car. What have they done to the car? Well, they've done so much detailed stuff, it's actually amazing. So they've thickened the front suspension, the push rod and the rear leg where they meet the chassis, not for any strength purposes, but just to change the airflow pattern. So they set up beneficial vortices that help make the floor work better. So this is sort of clear wind tunnel work going on. There's new vanes all over the place. There's new floor fences. There's a new bib wing, which is the bit basically under the driver's thigh, which sort of splits off air so that some of it goes around the side pods, some of it goes towards the underfloor. They've changed the camber of the rear wingtip, which is a track-specific change for this circuit, and that's just to tweak the balance between drag and downforce. They want to try and reduce a bit of the drag for the straights, because this is a fast circuit. The main problem Mercedes face is this bouncing problem, which seems to manifest it most at bumpy circuits. They were hoping that Silverstone's smooth and recently resurfaced surface, that's a terrible tautology, isn't it, would be beneficial, but Lewis was still complaining about a bit of bouncing. I think there's probably an element of, as Matt said, a bit of pushing hard to entertain the home audience. And there's no doubt that you find a bit of speed as a British driver when performing in front of your home crowd. Nigel Mansell always used to say you found an extra couple of tenths. I don't think the car's been transformed into a race winner overnight. But what I would say about Lewis is that there's kind of a myth grown up this year that George Russell's outperformed him somehow and that he's getting his backside handed to him on a silver platter by the young guy. And that's not really the case at all. There's been a lot of mitigating circumstances. It's been very hard to draw any definitive conclusions about what's happening between the two drivers because Mercedes have been experimenting with setups, with configurations. It's actually been very rare, certainly through practice, for Lewis and George to be running the same spec of car. So you can't really compare them in a lot of races. And ditto in qualifying, there's been a few things where, you know, Lewis might have made a mistake. Like the sprint race at Imola didn't work out so well. Other races where people said, oh, you know, Lewis did terribly at Imola, for instance. No, he didn't. He started on the wet side of the grid, so he went backwards, whereas George started on the dry side. So there's a lot of mitigating circumstances. Safety car timing in Australia and in Miami also didn't play into his hands. The only time, really, that those two guys have been on track on the same type of tyre at the same time has been in the final stint in Canada. So it's so early to actually say that Lewis should be sort of handing in his watch and going cruising off into the sunset. I think there's plenty more.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Oh, plenty more to come from him.
Nige is here. Mansell is in the hotel next door, in the posh one. So he might be wandering around and you could perhaps grab him for a few words in your quiz later.
Yeah, get him to do some table magic. Oh no, he nearly set Billy Monger on fire last time he did that.
So good luck with the quiz later, by the way. So,
well, yeah, hopefully some people out there listening right now will be coming to the quiz. We have prizes.
There are. Crofty used to do that. So how comes you got the gig? Did Crofty say no?
He's too expensive. No, last year he was bound by COVID bubbles. This year he's got some charity do somewhere, so he's unavailable. Sadly, so
of course he has.
I'm going to have to go into that sort of Alan Partridge mode. I'm afraid Sue Cook has cancelled.
Hey, last year we were on this same stage recording this, but all laid out 2 meters apart, so it's nice to be back and a degree of normality. Right, Matt, let me ask you about McLaren in that case, because Lando third. Now we saw some strangeness with him being dropped off the jacks, which is embarrassing more than anything. But talk about McLaren. Lando was third today, and not too far off the of Carlos Sainz's pace. Daniel Ricciardo ninth. What do you make of that?
Difficult to say.
Is the honest answer. He might be fast.
His answer. I'm going to put it the other way around and say, look, it's looking more like he might be slow. So that McLaren, we've seen the flash point. So in Imola, it was an opportunistic podium. In other circuits where, you know, they put together a run of form, you think they've cracked it, which is, you know, not where they were at the start of the season. But actually, after how bad the results were for both Norris and Ricciardo in Montreal, certainly the lack of pace they've gone, actually, no, we just had some circuits that suited us, and we come to Silverstone and they're a bit off the boil. So the stuff we're looking at, and yes, it's easy to get carried away with Norris in third, the end of FP2, come on, you know, that gives us confidence overnight. But I'm so a bit sad. So I've been looking at the long run data, and what you have here is Norris did 14 laps on the hard tyre, and his average lap, so how you work that out is you take the 14, and if they're about, you know, within five tenths either size of like an average, you think, yeah, decent. If they're way adrift, you think he's locked up, gone off. So you bin that to one side, or you put that to one side. But his average lap was a 134.76 on the hard tyres, 14 laps of that. And what does that mean? Well, it's quite hard to say, because Pirelli usually sort of release a differential of what it is between compounds. So the hard compound is obviously two away from the fastest soft, but we haven't been given that differential so far. But you can estimate it's usually a little over half a second, 6 tenths. So that would put him, let's say, at a 134.1 on the soft. That puts him half a second behind Sainz, 4 tenths behind Leclerc, 6-7 tenths behind Verstappen. So the long-winded answer to your question is McLaren's pace here looks like what McLaren's pace has been sort of the whole season, where it's in that, if you like, upper middle of the midfield, but they're not, I don't think they're going to set the world on fire here. Just their brakes.
I think set the world on fire is probably an inappropriate turn of phrase, given that we all had to pile out of the press room earlier.
We did. There was a fire drill. We had a fire drill. Someone, I don't know, stuffed up with catering or whatever, but we got told this was not a drill, and please leave and head outside.
In terms of tyres, three hardest, the hardest compound of the five here at Silverstone. Obviously, a smooth circuit, but very high speed circuit as well. Cotters, how much do you think tyres could play into this weekend and the various teams and how their cars suit different compounds?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because we saw earlier on that George was complaining about lack of grip on the hard tyre. Very often something happens. You sometimes see some cars working better on the hard tyre. McLaren seems to favour harder rubber. But, you know, it's still not in the window where it's a race-winning car. So When you look at the sort of the top two cars at the moment, the Ferrari and the Red Bull, a lot of races have come down to how hard they work the tyres, because there's sort of so little difference between them in terms of outright pace. At Silverstone, it's a track that's hard on tyres, so I would say that whatever you can do on the medium to sort of maximise pace and life, that'll be what they're looking to achieve. The trouble is that they lack the running today, and also the rain made the track a bit greener. So they're going to start tomorrow almost from a fresh page, especially if it rains again overnight.
Now, where we are recording this, we are the other side of Maggots Beckett's complex, one of my favourite places in the world to watch a Formula One car. You'll never see an overtake here, but it will just melt your brain about how a car can change direction that quickly. I absolutely love it, and we're the other side of the fence, as it were, in the campsite here. So looking at those kind of corners, when we were looking at the replays earlier on TV, Matt, and you've been looking at the long run pace as well, looking at how much Lewis was having to fight the car, how much steering angle he was putting into the car, and how in control Verstappen looked. One car looked turned up on the edge. One car looked to have load spare. And again, you know, my point on Max is he was complaining about that rubbing or something. He wasn't happy. He didn't get a clean lap. You've looked at the long run pace. Is it looking like a battle between Red Bull and Ferrari this weekend on Sunday?
Yes. But Mercedes,
they might or might not be fast.
It is, but if we're like continuing with me being a cynic, Mercedes' pace is absolutely there, but it's whether you buy into that or not. And as you've seen with the porpoising, or right at the end of the session, Lewis Hamilton ran wide out of cops and took a chunk of his front wing off. That's no good for a race. But if you'll bear with me and I can get a bit granular, I can give you some more numbers. And so Verstappen is sort of over FP2 pretty much for the bulk of the season. He's been like the benchmark. You look at him first and you think you're the right side of that, then you're in a really good shot of winning the race. So his numbers are, he did an average time of 1:33.476, so 1:33.5, let's call it that, and that was on the softest tyre. Well, I can happily say that Russell on the softest tyre did a 1:32.9. That was his average, so that's a sustained pace. That would possibly put him maybe, you know, half a second ahead. However, Verstappen was on a longer stint, so he's probably preserving his tyres a bit more. And again, it's always these caveats in FP2. What were they doing in terms of engine mode? How heavy were they running in terms of fuel? And also, drivers backing off. So, you know, when you're watching on TV, you get sector one, sector two, sector three. We're very lucky to have access to micro sectors when a lap is broken down into what, like sort of 21,
it's 25? It's too far away for me to count. I can just see the little yellow, green and purple blocks.
Exactly. I had more faith in the weather, so I've got contacts in today and wear sunglasses. I now can't see a thing on my laptop screen. But anyway, you see it micro seconds down, and basically it's still the same principles. Purple's fastest overall, green's personal best, and you have grey. And sometimes they'll put a run together of three grey sectors, and that's because Max may have potentially lifted on Wellington Straight, Hanger Straight, whatever. So you've always got those caveats again, which is why we sort of use a bit of softer language around it. But then what else we've got? Hamilton's average lap was a 33.8 on the medium, which puts him identical to Leclerc. And again, Leclerc we expect to be there or thereabouts, fighting for the win. Red Bull come here obviously in a really good run of form. They're not bringing updates here, so they're they're very sort of, or nowhere near as sweeping as Mercedes. So they're very rich in terms of data. They know what makes this car tick. Whereas Mercedes, as we've seen all the way throughout the season, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And they've had really like a struggle just sort of isolating what really unlocks this car. Red Bull now have had this car for the better part of, well, since really that Bahrain test, the Barcelona test when they sported those aggressive side pods. So they know what makes it work. It's like a really basic science experiment, isn't it? When you're doing your physics in year three, year four, they tell you change one thing at a time and then you can really isolate what is making a difference. And that's effectively what Red Bull are doing at a big boy level. They're sort of really sort of boiled down. They know what makes this car tick. Mercedes are bringing so much. Ferrari, again, you know, with what they've put themselves on reliability back foot. So again, it's just everything. And then they've got the confidence to run a form. Verstappen's good here. You know, he'll want to avenge what happened last year and so on. We can look at the numbers, but it's also like a psychological thing. And, you know, it all puts in Red Bull's camp, I think.
Okay. So, and then Cotter's on Ferrari, talking about how they've come to Silverstone on the back foot. Again, we've left those street circuits behind. We've come to a normal racetrack. How are you feeling about Ferrari, having seen two sessions now, one and a half sessions, really?
I was almost surprised to see Sainz at the top of the timesheet, because traditionally, the whole setup of this year's Ferrari has been that they've designed the engine, the boost, in such a way that it delivers a strong punch out of the slow to medium speed corners, and that comes at the expense of deployment from the electrical system at the top of the range on the high speed bits. Whereas the Honda engine in the Red Bull is the opposite. They've tuned it so it has more deployment at the top end, so it's fast on the straights. And in order to compensate for that, Ferrari's been having to tweak and remove downforce, remove drag, and really push to the edge of what they can get away with in terms of tyre degradation and making the car a bit edgy. It looks like the new rear wing has delivered an uptick in that car's ability to go at high speed. But even so, we saw the peculiar spectacle of the team going at the back end of the car with some sort of... It's like the sort of one of those Dremel things you see on the Home Shopping Channel.
All the teams love a Dremel. That's how they got the wheel off the Mercedes. Was it last year when it welded itself on? They just went to it with a Dremel for about 4 days.
Yeah, just drill through it as if it's like a model kit.
And let's talk a little bit out of order, but Albon was 14th and Nicholas Latifi 20th in the Times today. But I want to talk about Williams, slightly out of order, home team, of course. But if anyone's watching this on TV this weekend, they're going to think that car looks a little bit different than it was before. Talk us through what Williams have bought, a big upgrade package.
Yeah, and as Matt said, in the spirit of changing one thing at a time, they've changed one car at a time.
Everything. Here's our B-spec car.
they've changed everything on one car. And you could see it going around. It looked a lot like the 1992 Brabham with its pink and blue colour scheme. They had so much Flovis on that car. And Alex Albon's job was basically to just drive around with the Flovis on and gather data about how this new package works, and a phenomenal amount of work has gone into that, because to make that change of side pod, they've had to change the whole way the cooling system works. So at the beginning of the season, they had gone for quite an aggressive Mercedes style solution with two small sharply angled radiators in the side pods at the front. So it was quite a bluff face to the airflow, but then it sloped away quite aggressively at the back to sort of try and generate as much sort of downwash towards the beam wing, which seems to be the all important arbiter of helping to scavenge air from under the car. It's looking like that system is maybe not the ideal one.
Okay.
And certainly that car looked a little bit big, because it had what was known as a sort of a saddle radiator across the top of the engine, which made the engine cover quite bulky. So what they've done is gone for a sort of Ferrari style and Red Bull style solution of larger radiators on each side mounted very horizontally and more of a conventional side pod arrangement. So that's taken a lot of work and probably cost them a fair bit of money.
And Matt, we do get all the information from the FIA when they bring teams bring updates, which is, you know, useful for us. How much of it on the Williams is the stuff we can see, and how much is it the stuff this season with the aero changes that we don't see with the naked eye that is under the skin of the car?
It's sort of 50-50. Okay. So there's a lot of new stuff to see with the Williams, and I suppose it's helped by having two separate cars here. You've got an A and a B spec sort of right next to each other, so you can compare. And the interesting thing is, I remember in Bahrain when this sort of size zero side pod on a Mercedes turned up, and I said to Nicholas Latifi, like, at a very base level, the Williams looks most like the Mercedes. Mercedes have won the last 8 Constructors' Championships. That must give you confidence you're doing the right thing. And now what are we, halfway through the season? And now they look like the Red Bull and the Ferrari and nothing like it at all. But with the ground effect, it is all about what the floor is doing underneath, which is why sort of, you know, when the cars stop on track and they get craned, they have not over the covers that go over the top, but now sort of
they have like a valance, don't they?
You've got it on the valance. They've got all of that, and it's why getting pictures of those of the underneath the cars are like hen's teeth. You just can't see them anywhere. It's where all the tech secrets are. So we can look at the side pods and go, that looks different. That's got the really savage undercut, the Red Bull, or the concave like bathtub of the Ferrari. But it's what we can't see that's doing the business.
Working our way down. The Alfa Romeos, Valtteri Bottas topped FP1, but kind of meaningless. Valtteri Bottas, 11. Sebastian Vettel in 12th. Ocon in 13th. In the second Alpine, Alonso in 6th. And then I've mentioned Alex Albon, 14th. Zhou, 15. Yuki Tsunoda in 16th. Kevin Magnussen, the first of the two Haases, in 17th. Pierre Gasly, second AlphaTauri, in 18th. Mick Schumacher in 19th. And I mentioned Nicholas Latifi last. Before, I'm not going to run through all of those, but do you chaps want to say anything about any particular team that's caught your eye in the last couple of minutes?
Yeah, just as we were leaving the press room to make our way here, various plans were being put in place of how to forensically go through the bigger stories of the day, and one of the stories that our colleagues are very keen to dig into is dare we say the ghastly performance of the AlphaTauri drivers. They've had an absolute shocker today. So we'll be very interested to find out in granular detail what went wrong there. But really, the car's slow everywhere and lacking grip. So a lot of work to do tomorrow.
And Matt, anything that's caught your eye as we finish off the pod today that you want to mention?
I think it'd be more in the constructors' battle. You talk about having a number one and a number two driver. It's not necessarily in the contract, but I think Sainz and Leclerc are much closer. Or in fact, it could even be this weekend, Sainz leading the way. Perez, I think, has got a lot of overnight work to do. He's complained of an aero issue. It's a bit undiagnosed at this point, or certainly as we came over to record his podcast, because it's sort of straight away. But I think Perez has got some overnight work to do to get close to Verstappen. So he might take a leaf out of Hamilton's book from last year when Hamilton pulled off that sensational win, which is spend all night tonight in a simulator, being as it's so close by.
Why not?
Just a short trip down the A5 to the Red Bull factory, so why not?
Thank you very much, gents, for making your way so quickly, fighting the crowds to come over here and record this and do it in front of the crowd as well on the big screen. And for all our listeners at home, thank you for listening. Right, that's our analysis of practice. We'll be back tomorrow once again, live from the GP Racing Fan Village. I will be joined tomorrow by yourself, Cotters, again.
Yes.
We're working you hard this weekend.
I'm earning my breakfast.
Deep. And your colleague Alex Kalinorkis, our Grand Prix editor, will be on the podcast tomorrow. Thank
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Thank you very much for listening and watching, if you have been, and we'll catch you soon.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Message and data rates may apply. Guys, got hair loss? I know what you're thinking. Should I shave my head, comb it over, wear a hat?
Just stop. This is in 1970. Keep your hair and your confidence because Bosley, America's number one hair restoration experts, can give you your real hair back permanently. Check them out today because they're giving away an absolutely free information kit and a free gift card to anyone that texts EASY to 203203. Dude, you don't have to look like your dad, because this isn't your dad's hair loss treatment. People all over the country trust Bosley because they're ahead of the curve. They use the latest technology to give you your real hair back. And the best part? Bosley's permanent solution is protected by the Bosley Guarantee. Let Bosley show you for free how awesome your hair could look with an absolutely free information kit and a gift card for $250 off. Text EASY to 203203. That's BASY to 203203.
Sports Social Podcast Network.